Morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Sue, and welcome, counsel. This is the third of three oral arguments that we're having this morning, all via Zoom. Judges Bjorkman and Smith join me, Judge Sleater, in this third proceeding. It's file A23-1630, Jesse A. Frecking, petitioner, versus Audra Jo Frecking, now known as Audra Jo Buxengard, who is the appellant. And counsel, we do ask that you, when you do begin your statements, that you identify yourself for our record. We are recording these proceedings and also live streaming them, and there'll be an audio recording on the Judicial Branch's website within 24 hours, so no other recording is allowed. And with that, and then keep an eye on the clock. It should be some corner of your screen as you're visiting with us this morning to keep you on time as well. Counsel for appellant, you may begin, identify yourself, and then proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Michelle Olson, and I represent the appellant, Audra Buxengard. I will request to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. This is a case that has been appealed once before for a similar issue to what we are requesting now, that the district court did not make proper and full findings to explain the allocation and to justify whether it is fair and equitable under the marital statutory standard. In reviewing the case, we are asking for a reversal to provide more findings, but also some specific findings we believe should be added based on the record that has been already presented by the court, not only in the original trial, which would have been around 2016, but also in the second trial, which was in 2021. In this instance, if the allocation itself ends up with petitioner having kind of a windfall in which he receives most of the assets, most of the equity, and comes out actually, as stated in my brief, with a positive number in equity while my client has a debt, but then is also receiving $18,000. In addition, which is further money that seems to be based on a math error. So we are asking the court for help in these calculations.
Ms. Olson, can I ask you a preliminary question? In the first section of your brief, substantive section at least, you very summary, conclusory, somewhat similar to what you just did now, indicate that there is a insufficient findings. But then you go into more detail in your next section. Would it be fair to say that it's your analysis in that next substantive section where you talk about the house and machinery and et cetera, and I think the IRS loan perhaps, where you develop that, that is your substantive argument of where or how findings are either insufficient or there needs to be or clearly error?
Yes, Your Honor. So the first section in general, if the court doesn't agree with my exact points of what's not fair, if there's a reversal, just in general, there aren't a lot of findings, but then the substantive sections is to show what findings were missed, as well as why now the allocation isn't fair under the standard. I believe the court could go either way, just in reviewing the document in general. I do think conclusionary, it's similar to what we had before in 2016, in which the court found there wasn't enough findings. We have a similar instance here. Yes, we have a few more numbers added, but we don't actually have a lot of findings explaining the fairness of the allocation. It doesn't even actually say that it's fair. It just says these are the findings. We did do a motion for amended findings asking for additional findings to be added, including a correction in some mathematical errors. The court did grant a few of those because there were it was clear that there was an error, and I believe respondent conceded to those, but no further findings were made. So we are asking for the court either for a reversal and telling the court again to put in more findings, or in the alternative, a reversal with these specific findings we've requested, because we did already have a motion for amended findings, which I do believe is appropriate for appellate review in this instance. Specifically,
Ms. Olson, let me ask you then, as an example, though, so I can inquire what specific findings you might think is missing in relation to the semis and the trailer. The court made an explanation in its memo and it's basically a part of its denial of amended findings explained that it had already been sold from the last time, from the prior time of trial and to the current time, and that that was the explanation the judge gave for not using the appraisal report because it would be more accurate, which on its face certainly seems reasonable. And then pointed out that the equity was, I think, approximately 45,000. Using that as an example, what do you think is missing in terms of findings for our review?
I believe what is missing is actually the nature of the allocation, the equity that had been provided or had been, I guess, attributed to my client was actually equity that was given to a third party, which was my client's parents. There was undisputed testimony that they purchased the vehicles and paid off a $93,000 loan that doesn't get properly attributed in the divorce, but yet we are giving equity in which my client received no funds. And that is, as cited Daniel v. Danielson, it says that in dissolution proceedings, the court lacks jurisdiction over a non-party and can't adjudicate a non-party's property rights. In this instance, there wasn't a dispute that my client had sold the property for the $93,000 loan through an assumption, and my client did not receive that equity. Now,
wasn't there evidence that your client basically was received a credit for additional funds that she owed to her parents, that a debt was forgiven for sort of the excess of the amount of the appraised value of the semis and the amount that the parents sold it for?
There was a discussion about, I believe, our attorney's fees being paid through the district court because we were the district court attorney, and that the parents helped pay for that. However, there was a discussion that they were also obligated onto the debt from my recollection of the record. So this was a debt that the parents, Ms. Buxengard's parents, also owed to the firm. So it isn't actually a credit necessarily to her, but also to help the parents be out of a debt themselves. So again, it is their right to make that call. However, Ms. Buxengard, as has been testified to, I believe in 2016 and in the 2021 trial, that she would still have to pay her parents off. So she is still paying a debt in either way and isn't getting a credit for the equity. I think the issue becomes, well, there's a description of that now the more accurate number is 2021. What is being forgotten is that the reason why there was a stipulation on the 2016 numbers is because the reversal was based on a request for additional findings, not that the allocation itself was improper or not equitable. And all parties agreed we should be using the 2016 findings. It should go back to what the original trial was and to further provide some additional information. But that isn't then to say to value them higher, because by respondents' own recollection, just in the semi-trucks, it was valued at zero. He valued it at zero. And in our brief, even using the trucks, I actually point out what the trucks would be valued out on the Prinz report, because they had said it was zero equity. And the zero equity wasn't because the trucks had no value, but because the loan surpassed the value of the vehicles. So in my brief, I do actually allocate it. But the further issue we run into is that there were significant items that actually had been appraised, had been agreed to on those appraisals, and weren't allocated out. There were just X's given to them. So when you actually review what has been given, we're not necessarily saying don't keep the allocation as is, but again, the findings are inaccurate based on the party's stipulated agreement to use the Prinz report. And this evidence was at trial for the court, for the district court to make. When you look at it, petitioner actually received $330,000 in asset, and respondent received $330,000 in assets, and appellant received $185,000, which again makes sense when he concedes and agrees to take on the FSA loan, which was the major debt that we had. And in that case, he respondent in this matter received $267,000 of debt, and appellant received $213,000.
Ms. Olson, can I ask you one other area that you suggest that there was insufficient findings or an absence of findings was this farm machinery and equipment. But I'm looking on page 59 of the judge's memorandum, and the judge explained that these were items that were sold prior to finalization of the dissolution, and that they were all basically underwater debt, including part of it to the FSA loan, and so that he received nothing from it, and the party's loan together was jointly reduced a bit as a result of that, the loan that he agrees to take. So what a more explanation or lack of explanation from your client's standpoint would we see from that section of the judge's order? What's wrong with that? In other words,
That's where I think there is an actual just mathematical error, because if it's underwater, that's fine. However, it wasn't explained how the value was subtracted from that loan. It wasn't previously subtracted to say, well, this is the loan without those items. It was that the items have value. No matter what, the items do have a value. It's just how we subtract them. We agree that the parties probably were underwater. I mean, if you look at their asset to debt, they have minimal equity. But it seems absurd that, for instance, the homestead, which was clearly underwater, somehow has some equity, but not contributing all the mortgage information at 2016, which is what got agreed to. But then in the trucks, we find now some equity without subtracting out the loan. We just are not meeting all the asset and debt allocation. Again, we aren't disputing that the allocation should be as written by the court. It's more that it seems that there were findings that everybody agreed to, and there is no dispute or any change from the district court saying, this is why, besides the trucks, this is why I picked a different number, or I didn't pick any number. We have X's, and that is that puts us in the same position we were originally in the 2016 appeal, which is, how can it truly say that it's fair when everybody agreed to use those numbers, including the court? And then all of a sudden it comes out that my client has less. And looking at the district court's document, there are several items that definitely had values on the record, and they're not attributed to, but there's also no finding saying that I'm not using this number for this reason.
Ms. Olson, you mentioned the X a couple of times. X is that really wasn't part of the reversal and remand from our court, was it? In fact, I thought there was a footnote perhaps in our earlier decision that explaining why those X's, which I thought had something to do with no values were provided or something to that effect, so that there'd be no number in there. But that really wasn't an issue on remand, was it?
I think it was, Your Honor. I do remember the footnote, but I think in reviewing the record in 2021, it is shown that there some of those did have values. And if they did have values and they were presented in 2016, then in 2021, when we're calculating that and everybody's agreeing to the numbers, then those values should be attributed properly. If you review our requested change, in putting in the values, we're showing that there is a $35,000 mathematical discrepancy where respondent is getting $35,000 in positive equity, and my client is not, and then she is also now asked to pay $18,000. It just doesn't make mathematical sense with the numbers that we had, that everybody had agreed to. We want what's fair and equitable. In our motion for amended findings, we explained.
I want to ask you, I think you've just teed up a question that I have, and that is the notion of distribution being fair and equitable is not the same as saying it's mathematically the same. What makes this distribution, which, you know, I'm comparing the 2017 asset and debt allocation to the 2023, and frankly, it does seem that the 2023 allocation was more fair and equitable. Why am I wrong? What is it precisely that makes this allocation unfair and inequitable?
Just going on the allocation itself, what isn't fair is the values not being properly attributed. We're not saying each item being given seems less fair, but in reviewing it, if we have a total amount of asset value that has been agreed upon by the parties of $516,000, a little more than $500,000, and we have $482,000 of debt, it seems inconceivable that petitioner or appellant, or excuse me, respondent in this matter is receiving $63,000 of positive equity, even taking the majority of the debt. And he's not. He's taking a little more than half in reviewing actually what got calculated by the parties. And appellant in this matter is getting negative $28,000. She's coming off in the red, which again is why I'm saying there's about a $35,000 discrepancy. And on top of that, I see my time is up. May I finish my
You
answer?
may finish, yes.
Thank you. And then on top of that, it seems that she is told that she didn't give enough money to him, and there's an additional 18,000, which just doesn't make sense.
Very well, and you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. And now, counsel for respondent, you may identify yourself and begin.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, Your Honors, counsel. May it please the court. My name is Mary Ellen Surhoff, and I represent Mr. Jesse Frecking. The question presented is whether the district court abused its discretion when reallocating assets and debts, and was the reallocation fair and equitable? We ask this court to affirm the district court by finding that the district court provided sufficient findings and rationale for its allocation or reallocation of assets and debts, and this reallocation is fair and equitable. The standard of review is an abuse of discretion, and district court's findings shall not be set aside unless clearly erroneous, and due regard is given to the opportunity of the district court to judge the credibility of the witnesses. A finding is clearly erroneous when the court has the definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made. When determining whether findings are clearly erroneous, this court views the record in light most favorable to the district court's findings. Now, Ms. Buxengard would like to have this court go back to the original July 2017 divorce decree, original distribution, which was very lopsided in Ms. Buxengard's favor. On the first appeal, the Court of Appeals recognized how unfair it was and remanded, basically telling the district court that it was its intention to order a disparate allocation. It has to explain itself. It has to present a rationale for the unfair distribution, or if it deems necessary, order a reapportionment of the assets and debts. And that's on page 22 of the Court of Appeals decision. And that's what the district court did. It
Counsel,
did get its
can you help me out on the equalization payment? I mean, there's virtually no findings. And given that there's already a numerical, the difference in the allocation, what is the evidence that supports the $18,000 plus equalization payment awarded to your client?
Well, my client did agree to take the FSA debt, which was very substantial, but if you take that out, it is the difference. Looking at the assets that Ms. Buxengard received, the furniture, the house, and then she is taking on less debt. And the difference yields that $18,000. In the original order, my client was required to pay $329,000. And Ms. Buxengard was only required to pay $21,000 in terms of liabilities. In the final order, my client, it was reduced. My client is still liable for $258,000, and Ms. Buxengard's is was increased to 56,000. It's still lopsided because my client's taking the FSA debt. He also had a debt for seed, which was $50,000. But we believe that particularly the IRS debt should be divided. And that was a big difference in the reallocation was the IRS debt.
Can I ask you about that, Ms. Saraf? It wasn't clear in the record. And I understand the reasoning that the court did apply now on the remand that we're reviewing that because she, appellant was the bookkeeper, was somehow involved, but apparently it's undisputed that he was the principal owner of a corporation now dissolved. Is the debt in his name in the corporation that's now dissolved? Was there any evidence on that? I didn't see it that's raised directly on appeal, but it kind of jumped off the page at me when I saw IRS for a corporation.
So are you asking if the IRS is going after both parties or just one party?
Or a third party entity being the corporation?
Oh, no, they're going personally after, okay. Yeah, Mr. Frecking.
And that was the evidence at trial. So that's why it's a debt to these parties as part of a marriage debt.
Right, right. Yes. Okay. Now, as directed by, now why the reallocation is fairer is because the IRS debt is divided. Also, as directed by the Court of Appeals, the award of a gator, which was belonging to Mr. Jesse Frecking's brother, that was deleted from the requirement or liability of Mr. Jesse Frecking. The award to Ms. Buxengard of insurance proceeds, which did not exist. There was $16,000 in insurance proceeds. It was paid towards marital debt. My client did not receive any funds. And so the reallocation was fairer because they deleted the obligation of Mr. Frecking to pay Ms. Buxengard $8,000. Ms. Buxengard was awarded all the property, the household furniture, all the property that had equity except the tools and the guns. She was awarded the excursion, all the furniture, the two semis, and the trailer. Mr. Frecking was charged with most of the debt, the FSA, the IRS, and the high balance credit cards. So the true value of an item is what someone is willing to pay for it, and that equity. And so I'd like to refute a couple of things that counsel said. First of all, the equity, the court awarded Ms. Buxengard the trailers. Ms. Buxengard chose to gift it to her parents. And the result was that her debt to her parents for attorney's fees was reduced. She received a benefit. My client has attorney's fees. Neither side's attorney's fees was listed as a marital debt. Okay. She benefited from that. My client has many, you know, a large debt in terms of attorney's fees. It's just a manipulation to say, oh, that it was sold really that the parents actually got the benefit. No, Ms. Buxengard was awarded the trailer and the semis. It was sold and one of her debts was reduced by $45,000. So she did receive a benefit. So that should be attributed to her. The other thing that counsel is misstating.
How do you respond to the argument that the district court erred or abused its discretion by failing to apply the stipulated values? I mean, setting aside what appellant may or may not have actually received at the time the semi-trailer tractor were sold, that there had been a stipulation by the parties. Was the district court obligated to accept that and use that as its basis?
It's not obligated to accept it. When we referred to the appraisal, we were referencing the household furniture, some of the other items. You could see that the appraisal and the FSA appraisals were very, very close in numbers. And that was like for the farming machinery and everything else was sold. And so counsel is misrepresenting that or misconstruing, you know, counsel wants the values of farm machinery be attributed to my client when he didn't receive anything for them. They were underwater and they were sold, and the proceeds went to either FSA or John Deere or some other creditor. So you don't have, you can't put that in his column as if he received some benefit from it. I mean, they both benefited because it's marital debt and reduced marital debt, but you can't put it in Mr. Frecking's column. So that's where counsel's argument fails.
On that issue, the concern that was raised by appellant was that he continued to use the machinery as part of a farming operation. And the judge's statement is that any benefit that petitioner continues to gain from the equipment can be applied to child support calculations. Can you interpret that for me?
Yes. Well, first of all, there's no evidence on the record of what he was able to continue to use or not use. Mr. Frecking's brother, the intent at least was for him to buy some of that equipment that was underwater. And so I think there's speculation that my client, who continued to farm only for a few months after that, was able to use that machinery. But again, he was then farming for his brother. And so it's all speculative. What we're saying is that if he was able to use that equipment to farm, that resulted in some income. And then the income, of course, relates to the child support calculations. How much does he owe Ms. Buxton's Guard in child support? Because it was related to his ability to earn income. Mr. Frecking originally wanted to be awarded the semis and the trailer because that's what he did for a living. It helped him in farming. He's also a trucker. And so he asked for the actual equipment. In hindsight, we believe the court should have either, gave each party a semi or just ordered it sold and split the equity. But instead, the original court order gave everything to Ms. Buxengard. Ms. Buxengard doesn't truck. She doesn't farm. She had no use for it. She even said in her testimony, I want these semis for the equity. And she argued for the equity originally, and then she argued to actually get the trucks. And she wanted them because she knew there was equity in them, and she wanted to reduce her debt to her parents. And it's right in the transcript. We disagree that we wanted the judge to go back on remand to the 2017 court order. My client filed a motion for amended findings after the 2017 order. And it went to the Court of Appeals. So no, we don't want, the 2017 order was not fair and equitable, whereas the new order is, and we're in favor of that. Now, Ms. Buxengard does get some assets, even if there's no equity. There's, in the house, it's a little more complicated. If the FSA loan is released in the future, there is clearly some equity in that. But she has an asset. Well, two things. One is that it's her homestead. So in reality, FSA is probably going to be unable to collect from her home because it's her homestead. Secondly, she is... she's awarded an asset in terms of, that's her homestead. She got the asset. My client, the guns and tools were attributed to him. They each got a motorcycle that's underwater. They both have a lien against them. But other than that, my client didn't get any assets. Here she has a homestead. This is her home that she can live in. So there's some value in itself. And in the future, if the FSA loan is released, there is equity in that marital home. I would like to, entertain any questions that the court has.
I see no other questions. If you want to do a brief summary, then I'll turn it back over to the appellant's counsel for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. The $18,000 comes from the $45,000 equity that Ms. Buxengard received, minus the equity imputed to my client, which was the tools and the guns. And that's the subtraction and then the divided by two. So that $18,000 is equalizing the asset distribution.
And you're referring to the Appendix A attached to the judge's order.
Right. And so, okay. So then it's also included the furniture, because the judge didn't divide the equity and the furniture that Ms. Buxengard received. So if you look at the equity and the furniture, the Ford excursion, which was about $4,000, and the $45,000, and my client only received the tools and the guns. And then I believe that's the math that Your Honor was asking about. And that's where we received the $18,000 for Ms. Buxengard to pay Mr. Frecking. And even with the $18,000, look at the debt that he is incurring, or he is, you know, going to be liable for. It's still extremely lopsided. So, I mean, by reducing his obligations somewhat from $329,000 to $258,000, increasing Ms. Buxengard's from $21,000 to $56,000, we believe that the new order is fair and equitable. We also believe that...
Your time has expired now, Mr. Hoff. Sorry about that.
Oh, may I just finish the sentence?
Yes, you may.
We also believe that the court in its order, and I explained this in my appeal, my appellate brief, is that it explained itself with the Schmitz formula, and you know, it clearly explained its rationale for the new distribution. Thank you.
Very well, thank you. And Ms. Olson, you'll now have 5 minutes of rebuttal, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to be clear, no one is asking for the court to go back to the 2016 order. We understand there was an appeal. Well, we disagreed that the court couldn't have made findings to show fair and equitable. In our brief, we use the determination by the district court, and it is not fair and equitable under the math that has been received. There is no evidence that the FSA loan subtracted any of the items that it claims to have held for creditors. And that is the problem we have, where assets are being allocated to my client, who absolutely has a home that is considered underwater, yet she has a $63,000 home valued to her, or 61, excuse me, because there was a non-marital Schmitz for kind of modified Schmitz formula applied. Why is it that my client is receiving assets that are underwater and being calculated that way, when the same isn't being done on the assets that technically petitioner, or excuse me, a respondent would have received per the allocation? The allocation is these parties had marital assets that were used for that farm. It was already determined that that was the case, and there was no change in that decision, yet those assets are not being applied. This FSA loan, which was testified to, my client isn't on. My client didn't have anything except for she had collateral in her home and a motorcycle. Those were all testified to both in 2016 and 2021, yet somehow it is considered entirely a marital asset, though the FSA loan was used for a farming operation with Justin Frecking, the brother, and Jesse Frecking, the respondent. It is having your cake and eating it too, and it is an unfair distribution. We are fine with allocating as the district court had. No one is trying to bring it back. But what we are trying to do is get the actual numbers based on the stipulations that not only appellant agreed to, but respondent agreed to, the court acknowledged, because there were no further discovery. The only difference and the only number that got changed was the trucks and trailers, but it was only regarding the equity. Again, my client didn't receive the money. A third party received the money. Miss Buxengard's parents both testified to it. Mr. Frecking could not deny that that's what happened. He just felt that it was unfair that they had this money and that it came from those trucks. However, that doesn't mean that a third party equity should now be applied to Miss Buxengard. If you go with the numbers that we have, we are virtually asking that an allocation not be set. What happened is, if you just go bare down to the basics and actually look at all of the things that had been appraised and had been added, based on everybody's agreement, my client is now in negative debt, significant negative debt, and respondent is not. And then my client is now told she has to pay an additional $18,000, which does not seem fair and equitable with the proper allocation. That is why we're asking this court to reverse, either again to make more findings, or just to, with a note that put those numbers in, put what everybody agreed to, and actually looking at that, then we would have a fair and equitable distribution as respondent is requesting, because we're not changing how the allocation will work out. But the math then would make sense, and actually we would show that the parties are equal. I think in total my client would be owed about $11,000 in an equalization potentially, which the court could say is not proper. Again, those are findings that could be made by the court, but we don't even have that. We don't have why an equalization is appropriate. We don't have math supporting necessarily the equalization is appropriate in the order. So we are asking for a reverse and a remand for additional findings, also with a note to use the PRINS report on all of the assets, because that was what was agreed to. That is the evidence supporting, that is supported, and the court said it would. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your answers to our questions today and your briefing. We will now take the matter under advisement. We'll be issuing an order within 90 days, and we will be adjourning momentarily to consider our non-oral calendar. You each have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.